Welcome to the Puppet Parent Podcast. In this episode, Z and I will talk about moving back to New York City, solving script hang-ups through storyboarding and staging, and how every village has something. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome back.
To the Puppet Parent Podcast. My name is Z, and I'm a parent.
My name is Chad. I'm
so
also a parent.
Gross.
It just came out.
We are recording.
It just came out. I had a couple of cookies. I had ice cream yesterday also, and I think that's made my tongue blow
up. My mom is watching.
What? Hey, Mom. Hey, Moms. Hey, Mom.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, so.
Happy Sunday.
That's right. We made it. Yay, another week.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yep, we've been here officially 2 months mm-hmm. now because we came to Western New York June 1st. So now it's just after August 1st. It's August 2nd today.
Happy August 2nd. It's International Friendship Day.
Is it really?
Yeah. This director of a school that I perform for in India sent me a text this morning, which is her last night, saying, Happy Friendship Day.
Aw, Happy Friendship Day.
Happy Friendship Day to all of our friends across the water who we will not see until our country gets its act together. Really, our country right now is like in the corner of the classroom facing against the wall saying like, what did you do? Come on.
Well, it's not our fault. It's not our fault, okay?
Yeah.
I refuse to take this on as something that I did wrong.
I mean, no, our country, all countries get rated on a curve, right? And our country, I read this online that's like,
the rest
of the world is looking at the USA the way that we looked at the documentary, The Tiger King. It's a hot mess.
Yes, that I will agree with. It is a hot mess.
Yes.
And, I have a lot of concerns about our government and about the election and everything, but it's just one of many concerns that are just floating around in my brain right now. New York City released its information, the guidelines for kids going back to school in the fall.
Really?
What
did this say? Because we're
facing. What's
this? No, my ear itched. This
isn't
a secret.
I thought you were trying to communicate something.
No. Just like, this guy really
like,
itchy.
For those listening, he's like holding his ear towards me, like, I can't hear you.
Do you want to hear my squeaky ear? Or
no.
My squeaky eyes?
No,
nobody
wants to hear that. Okay, so anyway, back to information that I was talking about. Thank
yes.
you for sharing about your ears and eyes. Maybe we'll get to the nose later. Let's see. So New York City released its guidelines for reopening schools. Mm-hmm. And the one takeaway that I've gotten so far, because I haven't been able to watch like an entire press conference yet because I haven't had high-speed internet access for enough time to be able to see it. It was that if the 7-day average of positivity rate is more than 3%, schools close in New York City, which in the rest of the state, it's 5%. So that makes me feel happy because I feel like, okay, yes, New York City is its own unique situation because so many people, we're all so close together. Do I think that we're going to go back in the fall? I still don't know. I still don't know what we're doing.
It's looking like no.
I'm not.
I'm just putting it out there.
I'm feeling a no. And here's why. We were so good and so careful for so long. Plus, Dr. Fauci, who I have a lot of respect for, and I am so thankful for that man being a voice of reason in the midst of all this chaos and disinformation, he has said that he truly believes that there will be a viable vaccine close to the end of the year. Now, maybe that means like in the new year, but we're talking like December, January, February, somewhere around there. And honestly, if that means that we're just not going to go back until then okay. But for right now, that just feels like the safer bet because Oh, how disappointing would it be, and how horrible would it be if we were to go back and then one of us were to get sick, and one of us maybe would get very, very sick. And I'm not saying neither of us have underlying health conditions, but we know of people who have gotten sick and then died, or then had long-term issues afterwards that they don't know if they're going to get better. So I'm not interested in getting sick or putting myself in a situation where the likelihood of us getting sick is higher. Plus, with the economic uncertainty of the city right now, people losing their homes possibly, you know, their apartments, not being able to pay rent because of the extra amount from unemployment being not included, I don't know how safe it's going to be. And I've always felt safe in our city, but you have a lot of people who aren't there right now. You have a lot of economic instability, and you have a high level of stress. And in September, I think there's going to be a whole lot of people coming back to the city. So I just feel like with our family and our situation, we could stay here. There's nobody saying we have to leave. So I think I'm feeling that that we should stay. But I don't know. You know, I know that, like, you know, our son will miss the first day of kindergarten, and our other son will miss his first day of second grade. But
I'm not precious about that kind of stuff.
I am a bit,
but I just feel like, okay, but you know, your parents like protected you from a global pandemic that's claimed, like, we're gonna hit 160,000 Americans pretty soon, and that's not all in our state. You know, it's like now it's like spread throughout all the 50 states, red states and blue states and et cetera. But it feels like, why not err on the side of caution? You know, it's like there's mm-hmm. The reason to bring kids back into school is because, especially for our age bracket of children, it's like it's better for them to have like hands-on schooling. But it's so dangerous for the teachers and for all the kids. And everybody who said that kids can't spread the virus, well, now they're saying, well, guess what? We did all these studies, and yes, they can just as mm-hmm. much.
And they should wear eye goggles now as well as masks. And it just feels like, you know what, guys? It's starting to get a little ridiculous. Can't we just put a pause a little longer on this if it's possible? If it's possible for you to do remote learning, let's do that.
Yeah.
You know, just to make it safer for everybody. Because it just feels like undue stress. And also, you know I mentioned last week that our older child, that he has some issues that we're trying to kind of tease out, like what exactly it is. We don't have a diagnosis yet, but we're trying to do some of our own personal stuff here at home. And I feel like, you know, it took us about 2 months to even out from the trauma for him of like everything that would happen in New York plus moving here. Now, 2 months later, we just had finally a really good week. Finally. I'm not interested in having like 4 more good weeks and then going back to a situation that will then traumatize him again and then having to go through all of this again. Like, let's keep that stability as long as possible and then go back when we have a better handle, knowing that the likelihood of it staying a positive situation is high. Because we don't know that, and I have a very bad feeling about things. So I don't know. I don't think that it's going to get as bad as it was, but I have no idea, and I just I'm much more cautious, and I think that that's also just me being a parent. I don't know that I would have felt this cautious if we hadn't had kids.
Right.
You know, but the kid thing, then suddenly it's like, oh, I'm making choices for other people's lives here. I hope I'm doing the right thing. Like, that's the constant, like, discussion in my head is like, I hope we're doing the right thing. I hope we're doing the right thing. And I mean, I guess that's all parents, right? All parents are always thinking that to themselves, at least the ones who are checked in and really trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. You're hoping you are. So I hope we are. It's tough.
I agree. I think we would have joined the ranks of young people in like throwing caution to the wind a little bit, but now it feels like I feel myself being a little judgy of people who are not doing as Mm-mm. much as we are. No, I mean, you know, it's like it can't help it, you know, and I will freely admit that if I see you walking around in town and you don't have a mask on, or you have like your nose hanging out of your mask, or any number of things, I'm just like, guys, come on, like let's be on at least like the same page here. And there's a lot of I don't know if it's the same in the city, but out here in the country, there's people who say like, well, if I get sick, well, that's just my bad, but I just refuse to wear a mask, you know, or the little justifications, you know, for it. And I want to feel like, okay, we can still be friends, you know, and I can still like you and stuff, because I grew up with people who would justify decisions or attitudes about stuff in kind of this cheery kind of like, well, you know, bad on me if something happens to me kind of a thing.
Oh, totally. I grew up in a household where the mantra from my dad was, do as I say, not as I do. Like, yeah. But I mean, yes, I agree about the mask wearing around here, but I don't feel judgy about anybody in New York City, like, or anybody
bad.
I know.
It's just as bad there, like, in terms of people wearing or not wearing, or gathering, not gathering, just as bad in the city, in the country. It's just less people here.
I think there's a part of me that misses our friends and our community in New York City, and then, you know, I see pictures of them, like, going to the beach and like having some small play dates with other friends, or socially distant, you know, moments of being together. And I miss that. And we left. I don't know. There's this feeling of we left, and I can't get past that either.
Hmm.
So,
You know, wouldn't Mr. Rogers say, you know, like, staying away is our way of saying I love you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, there is absolutely zero risk of our friends getting sick from us if they have no contact with us, right? So,
well, but there's risk for your parents, but we're very, very, very careful.
I know. And it was like, and when we moved, when we talked about coming in and staying with my parents, who are, my dad's going to be 70 mm-hmm. this year. He was just like, well, whatever about it.
Well, they just didn't go through what we went through, and nobody out here did. So when I see somebody not wearing their mask properly, or not wearing a mask at all, or carrying their mask, I just remind myself, you know what? They weren't in New York City when we were there. They didn't experience all of the death and all the trauma that we experienced. And I think that I just know I'm going to be forever changed because of all of this. I think we all are in different ways, but I don't know how this will play out going forward.
Well, there's going to be a bunch of Americans that are not around anymore, and a bunch of people that, like, everyone will know somebody that has died, and masks are going to be here forever.
I think, you know, there's going to be a huge turnover in terms of who's living in the city. I do think that.
That too.
I think that too. There's, and I think that the arts, I'm trying to think of like positive things that might come of this for the arts, because right now, you know, so many theaters are wondering like, when can we possibly get back to having theater again in a space? But, you know, I've been listening in on some talks, and one of the things that they've been talking about is hyperlocal, that creating an art scene and a community supporting the arts can happen on a much smaller, much more local scale, and that might be a thing that brings these communities together in a way that these large city arts organizations, you know, have to kind of pause and wait on, but that the outskirts, and we're right now in an outskirt or space.
We're in a village.
We are a village that had an art scene, actually, you know, and an arts community, and people who proclaim that they like that sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
And we've been doing the videos. We released Mystery Max visiting the dairy farm with robots yesterday. And
the next one's the metal shop, and it's a banger. It's amazing. Let me tell you, it's like, normally, you know, how we started editing these puppet videos is where, like, we have a hand puppet, we go out into the village somewhere to find somebody interesting, and then they interview them. And you can see, like, there's a hand puppet on the side of the screen, and there's, like, a human, and they're interviewing them. And it's very cute. And we started it just doing a very simple, just, like, very dry, like, okay, here's 2 minutes of a person talking, answering questions, and then 30 seconds of hijinks, and then 2 more minutes in a different location just talking. And that's it. But now we're on, like, episode 6 or 7 at this point, and just, like, the editing that I'm doing just gets ramped up and ramped up and ramped up. And it feels like...
That's all you, though.
I know.
You're doing that to yourself.
No, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that, like, as I'm doing it, I'm feeling like... Yeah, but where's the robots? Okay, but where do we get to cutting metal? You know, like, as soon as they start to talk about it, I'm like, if I was a kid, and I showed this to, we do streaming workshops for mm-hmm. streaming schools, right? That's what we're going to be doing more of this year, right? Because everybody's doing that, and that's mm-hmm. where we are too. We can't perform live for people, so we're going to be streaming live performances and also... involving our entire team of puppeteers in being teaching artists. Mm-hmm. Last Monday, I did a bunch of sessions where I was doing like 15 minutes of show. Then I was like, okay, and now check this out. You saw the story of the Little Red Hen. It's more like 25 minutes show. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to show you Mystery Max is going to take you onto a real farm. And guess what, guys? There's robots. And I showed them the video, and as we were watching it together, I was like, man, I need to get to the robots faster. I need to show the robots to, like, early on, because to actually watch the audience of kids, you know, 3-year-olds, get to the part where robots are happening, I'm like, all right, I want to get to the meat of it. So I've been cutting more B-roll into splicing more. And with this new metal shop video, as soon as he starts talking about, like, well, we do welding. Oh, what's welding? I'm like, boom, here it is. Let me show you the welding right over top that interview, because that's the cool part. And I want to get to the awesome stuff quicker.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's awesome. I'm so excited to see it. Chad always does such a great job
with
them.
I'll show you when we're done with this.
We have 2 more interviews that are scheduled coming up with an eye doctor mm-hmm. and also the town historian. And
something an adult thing to get excited about. History.
I know.
Ooh, local history.
And I'm so excited to learn. I know that Springville has some really interesting tidbits.
Let me tell you, nothing happened in the whole history of this town.
What? That's not true. Why would you say that?
Because I grew up here and we had to learn local history as part of our schooling.
Honey.
So let me tell you.
You have
nothing happened.
Pop Warner here. Museum. You have Novocaine.
Famous people might have come from here. A couple.
You have the great automobile race.
Uh-huh. Nobody knows that except for the people who live
here. Well,
that's
okay. That's okay. But, I mean, I'm just saying that every small town, especially in Western New York, every single small town has something that they are proud of, that they're known for. My small town of Leroy, New York, we had a few things.
Yes.
We had Jell-O. That's the big one that everybody knows about. But then there's other things that people don't know about. There's the stringless string bean that was... developed by Calvin Keeney.
Oh, in Leroy? Did he develop in Leroy?
Yes,
or was he just born there?
No, he developed it in Leroy. Like, he was a geneticist. Yes, mm-hmm. And he genetically modified the string bean to then not have strings. And actually, Burpee still sells
so
the
it's a bean
beans.
Now. It's just a bean.
It's a variety of seed. just like you can buy different varieties of plants,
yes.
planting seeds. So he, anyway, Stringless String Bean, Leroy, New York, yeah. Calvin Keeney. Jell-O, Leroy, New York.
Right. But I learned that Jell-O was invented in New York City.
The
plant was in Leroy. Mm-hmm. No, when I heard
we
that.
We called it Jell-O in Leroy. They didn't call it Jell-O in.
When I saw that in New York. In New York, they had these big, these big useless, expensive... monitors everywhere that may be giving out Wi-Fi signal, I hope. I'm not exactly sure. And they have, like, little factoids, right? So in one of them is, hey, Jell-O was invented in New York City. And I was like, what? No. My lady
That's right.
told me, and we did this Gelatin. Whole show about Jell-O. And that was my first time puppeteering, was in a show about how Jell-O is from Leroy. And
it
then
is.
This monitor is telling me, no,
Lies.
Actually, it was invented here in New York City.
No. What's the name of the free college that you don't have to pay tuition at in the middle of the city, right by...
CUNY?
No, the free one. I can't think of the name of it. David used to work there.
Yeah, the old-timey building.
And it's named after
it's
that
named
guy.
Named after that guy, yeah.
Oh, my God, I cannot think of it. The name, if you are watching this live, please put the name of it in the chat for me because I can't think of the name, but it's a university right in the middle of New York City, and it's named after the guy who actually invented gelatin, but he didn't call it Jell-O, and he didn't market it or brand it or flavor it in any way.
Yes.
Like, Leroy and the people in Leroy took Pearl B. Waite is his name. He
yes.
took Jell-O and his wife. His wife named it, actually.
Well, they took gelatin and combined it with, I don't know, sugar.
A flavor.
And flavor.
Yes. And then it became a treat.
Yeah, that man invented the Tom Thumb engine.
I hope Lynn Belluccio, our town historian, is watching this right now and is feeling proud of how much I have retained from fourth grade local history. And the other thing, while you're looking up the name of the university,
I'm
can't
not,
think
actually,
of.
I'm writing notes. About
oh,
her.
No. I want you to look it up because I can't think of it. It's
Okay, here, I'll look on the map.
The one that's right by St. Mark's Place. Oh, my God. I cannot believe I can't think of the name of that university.
You'll get it. It's probably mixed something.
No, it's not. It's like it's not. A C. It starts with a C. I don't know. Anyway, the other thing that Leroy is super known for is the first accredited women's university named Ingham University, and it was in Leroy, and it was a very big deal, but unfortunately it went bankrupt, I believe, and then eventually got torn down.
But, wah.
I know.
The first accredited women's university. It feels like a stretch, but it's something.
Don't take it away. We only have a few things. So Springville, things that I know of from Chad telling me things. The Glenn Pop Warner Museum about football.
Uh-huh.
The Great Automobile Race by Tom.
He was born here. He didn't do his footballing here.
Who cares? He's got a museum here. Tom Stoddard, right? Didn't he win the automobile race?
I don't know his name, actually.
Oh, well, somebody won the Great Automobile Race.
Of 19-something.
A long time ago.
Yes, a long time ago.
Big deal. And Novocaine. And these are just the things that I know of. So I'm so excited to...
Oh, that's actually the end of the list.
No, Novocaine. I'm sure there's more.
That's
more.
And dairy.
No,
we
the
used to
first...
have a lot of dairy farmers
the
here.
First high school in the area. We just learned that the other day.
Yeah.
Was Springville Griffith.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we still... And a lot of people from surrounding areas. We have a hospital here. Mm-hmm. There's cool things
Cooper
about
Union.
Town.
Cooper Union.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Cooper.
P.T. Cooper.
Yes.
Just came to me. See, I said it was a C. P.T. Cooper invented gelatin.
Yes.
Okay.
So he
by boiling animal bones.
Yes.
But he did not flavor it. And so then Pearl B. Waite in his kitchen in Leroy.
Feels like a stretch.
It's not a stretch. What are you talking about? He branded it. He marketed it. And his wife gave it the name Jell-O. And then Leroy was on the map for quite a while until Kraft Foods bought Jell-O and moved it to Delaware. So, yeah.
And who knows where they're making it now?
I don't know. But not in Leroy.
Wah. Yep. Used to have Women's University gone.
Mm-hmm.
Jell-O gone.
Mm-hmm.
What are those? It used to have you gone.
Gone. Sorry, Leroy.
Yep. What do they got? Not much, but this village has a lot going for it.
For those who are still in Leroy, there are some of my favorite people in Leroy, like my old music teachers in Leroy. Hi, Mrs. Duthie. And Lynn Belluccio, the town historian, still in Leroy.
Here's the thing is, like, I like that small towns have virtually no history and nothing going on. That's the allure of it.
That's not true, though.
That's why it's so cheap to buy houses in these places, because there's nothing. There's not much happening, and that's how people like it. If you want a town where there's a ton of history and folklore and like all the stuff that's happening now, you go to the city. That's it, because that's where things are happening. There's way more people. There's interesting people, but in like a different kind of way. That there's like there's art. There's like fantastical things all happening in the city. The city.
I don't agree.
Okay.
I feel like every place has a history. A rich history of things.
There's not a rich history.
Yes, I think every place has a rich history. That's perspective, my friend.
But New York City had a governor with a silver peg leg, okay? And that's just one of the millions of amazing factoids you can read on those monitors around New York City, right? Springville, my hometown, that like we love and enjoy right now, what do we got? What can compare to that?
I can't wait to see and listen from the historian. It's your hometown.
I know.
It's your hometown. I'm so excited about it.
If you grew up in a place.
This is what somebody feels like when they convert to Judaism. This is what it is. It's like the person who's Jewish is like, yeah, the thing that we do. And the person who converted is like, no, it's so special. It's so unique. This is what we do. I learned. I just talked to the rabbi. It's like you're so excited about the religion. So I'm so excited about your hometown. Even though it's not my hometown. So well, Uncle Tom says New York City always trying to steal our history.
No, I feel like when you grow up in a place, when you were like a rebellious teenager, you're like, this place you grew up in, and I still got some of that. Because when I was growing up, it was like, what do we got? Nothing. And it was the boring 80s, before we had the information age, when everybody was just bored. Bored all the time. What are you going to do? I don't know. My favorite show's not on yet. I guess I'll just go be bored. Do math homework.
At least you had brothers and sisters.
Yeah, this is true.
Only child.
Only children think that siblings are so amazing.
I'm just saying.
Then when you have them, you're like, oh, brothers and sisters. Wish I was an only child, let me tell you. The grass is always greener, except in New York City, because... Or let's say in the city, because every place has the city that's like near them, that like things are just happening. Anyway.
How was your week, Chad?
Good. I feel like we started out this with like the puppet pandemic podcast, but today I had another breakthrough. Let me show you. So. Today I came in. I came in like hours early.
I was home vacuuming, cleaning, making Chad's parents' house look nice.
Just as important, maybe more important. Okay, I was storyboarding. Yeah. So the last few podcasts, I've been telling you about like the process, script writing. You know, like refining and stuff. This morning, I always have my best ideas right in the morning, like shower thoughts, right? Because I always shower in the morning. So I'm always like thinking about scripts and what I have to do. And then I had this idea about staging, because the whole premise of this new show that I've been scripting in my mind and like writing all these versions for is staging. Like, how are we going to get the staging right? Because it can't just be a regular hand puppet show. The whole thing is for it to fill a big space. And we've never done this before. We did it once with our Little Red Riding Hood show. But even that was still like, it was still tabletop. So this is like big puppets, hand puppet booth, because I want to have a hand puppet booth in there because I like that. I'm good at that. So I feel like I want to have that. And then how to mix them together. And I was like, you know, what if you did this thing where you have like a big puppet and then here's your hand puppet booth, right? And you have the big puppet walk behind the hand puppet booth, like doo doo doo. And as soon as it crosses that line, as soon as it gets in there, you see a miniaturized version of it going doo 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 and continuing the walk. And then it gets to the other side, doo doo doo, and then it's big again. And it's like, huh? Mm-hmm. And then it goes back. And as soon as it pokes its head in behind the hand puppet booth, whoop, the little head pokes up.
Mm-hmm.
And playing with that. And I was like, yeah, that justifies this problem that I've been having, which is how do you justify having a hand puppet booth where the audience can see it, not on the side, but in like the middle? Like, how can you justify having a hand puppet booth in the middle, center stage, like down downstage, center stage. I was like, okay, we could play with that. Then I was like, because I've been working on this character for so long and these other characters too, I was like, okay, what if I took everything that I'd written, all the different versions of all the scripts, and I just threw that into the garbage, right?
So you always do that.
It just happens, because if you hold on to what you know in your heart could be a good idea, it's going to hold you back. So I just took all that and I was like, badoosh, goodbye. And I was like, what if I just took this character, right? And then this archetype and this arch. Okay, now we just have three characters. That's it. Just three. And one of them has something that the other, that all of them want. So, and it really made me feel like Tom and Jerry. Tom and Jerry's classic, and the boys have been watching that. Mm-hmm. And it's always like, there's a bone or a piece of meat or something, and there's a mouse and a cat and a dog. And, you know, like, one of them thinks they got it, and then the other one's going to try and sneak in and steal it. And when they try and get it back, then the other one gets involved. And, like, something like that where it's, like, this pulling in three. But there's also, like, an element of, like, Brer Rabbit. Brer Rabbit's a good example of the Renard stories from France.
Oh, Renard the Fox.
Renard the Fox. Trickster. Classic trickster that was kind of amalgamated into the Brer Rabbit character. So not the originator of those stories, but close to. And I'm
similar.
Brer Rabbit has its own, you know. If you're a Brer Rabbit fan, I don't want to knock, you know, the history involved in that, because there's a lot of cultural history. Anyway, so I was like, okay, the main character is like a trickster, does a lot of shenanigans, gets this bone. But then as soon as the other bigger animals come in, you know, Brer Rabbit had a wolf and a fox. Same with Renard. He had Bruin and Insegrim.
Didn't he have Bruin, a bear
Bruin,
and a fox?
Bruin the bear and Insegrim the wolf. So pretty close.
Okay.
Then he has to give it up, and then he has to sneakily get it back. And we have this whole thing of when you go behind here, you get small. So not only was I trying to mess with staging about, like, how do I justify having a puppet booth right in the center stage, but also how can I just do this with two puppeteers total? Total, because that means there can't be two puppeteers on the outside and one person inside the booth. It always has to be two. So if you only have three characters, you can do it cleverly to where all three characters are represented. So there's two puppeteers, but you could do three characters. It's kind of like this improv game, stand up, sit down, lay down.
Stand, sit, lie.
Yeah, stand, sit, lie. Thank you. Where you have to find a creative way for everyone to be, like, one person has to be sitting, one person has to be standing up, one person has to be laying on the floor. The scene has to continue. With two puppeteers and three characters, it's the same kind of thing, where you're like, one person has to be, one character has to be gone. The entire show has to be gone. Can be represented by something. Like, if the two puppeteers are on the two big characters, maybe you just hear the third character, or they're sleeping, or we see a piece of them, or something.
But if
that we know that they're there.
Both puppeteers are in the booth, then you could have three characters up.
Yeah, you could have four. You could have four. But I feel like the interaction, because it has to be in a big stage, the interaction between big and little has to be there, more important than just having everything happening in the booth. Sometimes things will just happen in the booth, but I feel like it'll be a lot of, like, going into the booth, coming out of the booth, character outside the booth, character inside the booth, you know, switching and vice versa. And I was able to, hopefully creatively, with a lot of transformations, because people have transformations, play with scale and size to tell a very simple story. Because I had, like,
fun.
All this history, all this real history that I was drawing from, all these classic characters that I was like, take this and this and this, and I want to pay tribute to these characters, and I want to, you know, like, all this historical, downtrodden, oppressed culture that I want to learn about, and we can, like, have a conversation about later and stuff. And I just took all that and threw it in the garbage. So now I just have a simple story, and now we can go from there. Because I find the most interesting, or the hardest part, is to do the ending. Ending's always hardest. Always. You have to start from the end. Start from the end, work your way back. Like, how do I want to end it? It was the hardest thing. I always wanted to end it with a character who's of two different worlds, right? The whole point of the show has to be characters of two different worlds. Okay, how does being from two different worlds save the day? Because if that's the whole point of the show, then that's what needs to happen. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. It was too hard for just two puppeteers to do. Now I have this very simple story with just three characters, and I threw the whole being of two different worlds thing out. It's gone. Sorry. Goodbye. Goodbye. I'll miss you. And now I'm just like, okay, what's the ending? I got the ending. Got it. And then I work my way back. And as I work my way back, I drew storyboards for different moments that I wanted. And then I would draw a storyboard that connects them. So this is like the very, this is like the very beginning. I don't know if you can see, but well, if you're watching this, so it's like, here's my big puppet and here's the booth. And they're going to go into the booth, and there's just going to be like, you ever been in like a theater piece where you're in the audience and something or someone comes up on stage and they're looking around and there's this mystery of like, what are they looking for? Who are they?
Yes.
You know, and yes. Like you can get away with a little bit of that in the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, and like, who are they? And you can tell a lot about the character just from that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Then when character number two comes in, then you have to get more specific and you mm-hmm. can't be like, ooh. you know, it's somewhere.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. so it's like they go into the booth. We play around with scale from like going in, going out, going in. We establish the gimmick, which is if you go in there, then a miniature version of you is going to pop up.
Okay.
And then once that's established, then we can play. Then we can play. And I did all these storyboards.
Great.
I
know, wow.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Oh, aren't I so? Yes.
So fancy.
Yeah. And so, yeah, all the very, at the very end of all these.
Wow, you were busy.
Yes. The very end, I'm just like, and this is the image. This is the image I will end on. This is my happy ending. There it is. And I can work my way back.
Okay.
And as soon as I knew that and I was happy with it, and I was like, this is the simplest story in the world. Not what I wanted. But that's okay. Then I feel like I could. Then I got a show.
All
like,
right.
I have a show, and we could do it.
Okay, great.
Yes.
That's great, Chad.
Thank you. There's a lot of words just vomited out.
Yes,
right.
Yes. Well,
you know.
You're so excited about it. First time I've heard about it. It's a premiere for me. So to hear about it.
All
so.
Those old, a good thing I never told the podcast what the old stuff was about, because that'd be embarrassing. Man, they'd be like, oh, but I like that other thing, and nope,
too bad.
It's gone.
Gone.
It's gone, sorry.
Well, that's how I feel sometimes when he tells me things. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad that you got so much done today.
Yeah.
I was
that was like 2 solid hours of like, ooh, and then this.
That's so exciting. Well, I can't wait to see, hear more about that when we're not recording, and then make some puppets.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Guess what? You just need six.
Six puppets?
Three hand puppets.
Mm-hmm.
And then three big ones.
Three walk arounds.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Cool. Well, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Are we going to have like a new covering for the stage too, so it doesn't look like a regular hand
it has
puppet
to be,
stage?
Well, this is, so the idea too is this has to tour.
Yes.
So the big walk around characters are not going to be Big Bird. Yeah, I know. I'm boring you to tears.
I'm sorry.
I know it.
I'm so sorry. No.
Not going to be Big Bird. Where you have to ship Big Bird in a giant crate, like Indiana Jones.
No, I was just asking if we needed a new stage covering for the puppet stage.
So it has to collapse way more than this. And it has to
like
just be...
Like the touring one?
It has to just be two-dimensional.
Oh.
Pretty close to two-dimensional.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
But we'll talk more about that.
Yeah. All right.
That's my thought right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yay. That's exciting. So,
yeah. So get ready. In 6 months, everyone out there in the internet who listens to this is going to be like, look at my new show.
I guess so. I guess we're going to have a new show.
Yeah,
I'll have a new puppet eventually, because I've been working on building a puppet every Tuesday and Thursday night. I have been doing live puppet building, and so that's progressing.
Yeah.
She's going to get eyes soon, so that's exciting. I just ordered some new colors for the lips. None of the lip colors of wool that I wanted, the lip colors of wool. Another colors of wool that I found were the exact color I wanted, but I got things that were close. I might be able to do some mixing to like really hone in on it, or some outlining or something, but I'm learning things with this puppet and with the coloring too. I have never done stuff like that, so... So that's exciting. I don't know what's going to happen. The next step is I have to order a wig for her. And so...
Ooh, and that's because it's Rapunzel, so it's got to be like... That's the hardest part, right?
Well, there's a company that makes a lot of doll wigs, and so I'm just going to look through and see what they have first, and then think about that, about what I want to do. I think I still want to go with a doll wig, but I might then get extra wefts and then make the braids longer than what they initially would have been.
Well, you know, the... That do you see that doll head that I had, the bald doll head that I got? I got this specifically so that we could figure out if the accessories for those dolls would fit our usual hand puppets. So that doll head that I that ordered, it's like a Dolphy Dream or something. That you can't tell how big it's going to be in relation to your fingers, right? But I'm pretty sure the size that I got for that one, I'll look it up what it was. That the wigs, and there are many amazing ones for that type of doll, would work.
Well, what's nice about this site that I go through, I always go through Monique Wigs, and you measure the circumference of your doll's head, and then they have wigs based on that circumference. And
that's nice.
And most of the wigs that I look at are made for dolls that are the same size as American Girl doll, because I try to make the circumference about that. Sometimes I have to take some wefting out of the wig, but that's okay. You can make wigs smaller. It is harder to make them bigger. That means you have to like cut them a little bit and widen them, but then you're missing coverage if you do that. And the thing with Rapunzel, and it's a Rapunzel who has darker skin, so she's going to have these amazing long black braids, and I just need to figure out what that's going to completely look like. I don't think they're going to be cornrows. I think that they're going to be braids that are just pulled back. So, but it's exciting.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to making some puppets for this project that are like slapped together out of cardboard and fabric.
Oh, we have a lot of that here.
Yeah.
Lots of toilet paper tubes.
They're gonna look crummy. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna be the final version. You're making the final version like all the time.
Yeah, I don't really make mock-ups so much. I just always make... Because it takes so long to make the final, so just start making the final. But I don't know that we'll ever make a show around this puppet, but at least it's been a nice journey for me to make this puppet. It's a good challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot. And I've been using like different images of different women and young women who I'm taking like different elements of their faces and looking at them a lot. So that's also helping me, because I'm very familiar with how my face looks and how like the traditional like white face looks. And so I'm looking at women of color and like really looking at their noses, lips, like eye proportion, like all these things. Especially I'm looking a lot at Missy Elliott's face, because I just love her face. I think she's just got a really amazing face, and I love her nose. Missy Elliott's nose is amazing. Wow. So it's just perfect for what I want for this puppet. It's like the bridge is set in. It's a nice flat bridge on the top, but wider nostrils and a little flatter here. It's just a different build than what I'm used to building. So anyway, I'm learning a lot about proportion and face shape. And actually, you know, it's taking me back to one of the first faces I ever sculpted out of clay, which was a beautiful male model of color. And he had this amazing nose and lips and everything. And I loved just all of that. And it's been a wonderful journey and challenging, too. So,
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we've both been busy. Yeah.
Anything else we should talk about today?
I mean, I think that's pretty good. I mean, when you have like a nice, easy week, you know, it's like nothing to talk about on the home front. I mean, our kids are obsessed with Pokemon and Pokemon cards that we brought into their lives. And if you're out there, any collectible card game where there's like battling involved, we usually don't go in for like competitive, you know, we're all about cooperative. But collectible card games are all about math all the time, and doing math in your head. And after like a bunch of sessions of getting both of our kids involved in the math parts, because there's a lot of like, okay, what's 120 minus 70 kind of a thing? Because like, all right, you have 120 HP, you just got hit with a 70 HP attack, how much do you have left? You know, and he's doing it in his head. The older one of them getting the younger one to say, like, is that greater than or equal to or lesser? And eventually he'll do the math too. But right now it's like perfect for their age about like, okay, do the math in your head. And even today he did some quick math in his head, like a bunch of like, you know, like hundreds, mm-hmm. you know? It's great. And it's a good intro for the new math that parents hate, which is like subtract a little bit from these numbers, add these numbers together, bring those numbers back, and then you can easily do the math in your head kind of thing. And that's kind of how I was taught in the fourth grade the second time around for me. And that was revolutionary at the time in like the early 90s. But I was just standard, so.
Yeah. There was an infomercial all about that method.
Oh, yes.
Remember.
They didn't call it Common Core back then.
No. No, it was like fast math or something.
Yeah.
Math in your head.
Yeah, and it really helps.
You know, I saw a great infomercial the other day.
Oh, man. Can we tell them? We've been watching infomercials late night, Z's favorite thing. Our thing, this is what we do as a couple, is we sit and eat terrible food.
It's not terrible. I had vegetables and hummus. That's not terrible.
Oh, okay, well, I had terrible food.
Oh.
I had, like, chips. I had already brushed my teeth. And we stay up late and watch infomercials. We watched Martha Stewart talking about her stuff over Zoom.
What?
Yeah, like on QVC.
Oh, yeah,
we watched
on
QVC Live,
so QVC,
and stuff like that.
Home Shopping Network.
Yeah, where it's live and the salesmen are like beaming in their videos from their homes. So there's
I just love it because of the live component, because then every once in a while something goes wrong and then them trying to figure out and scramble, and then the Zoom component of it, like them not being in the same room, is actually just doubly challenging.
Yes.
And hijinks. I just love it. I don't know. There's something about live TV and sales, and you can judge me. It's okay. I really, really love Home Shopping Network and QVC. I find it calming, and I don't buy anything, but I love how they advertise and all that stuff. But anyway, I saw an infomercial for something that I really wanted, and my birthday's at the end of the month, so I asked Chad if he would get it for me.
Yeah, you want to tell everybody what it is?
Yes.
Because I actually can't say the name.
It's a Spurtle. They're Spurtles. It's a spoon that's from Scotland.
Uh-huh.
That's like a really long, thin piece of wood, and you use it for everything. And I saw this. I only saw the infomercial once, and I remembered what it was and thought about it for over a week. And then I said, Chad, I need it. I need it. And I never asked for anything like that. But they're wooden, and they're so pretty, and I really want them. I want the Spurtles.
So Z had me look up the commercial.
I did. I showed him the commercial online.
Because she's like, no, I don't. I forget the name of it, but it's just really great. And it does so many different things. And I look it up, and like, oh, it's a spoon.
It's a fancy spoon. From Scotland.
Yeah,
to stir oatmeal.
Ancient Scottish spoon. Before they invented the indent in the piece of wood into a spoon.
You don't want the indent. You don't
no,
want the indent. Not
it's,
for
it's
this.
It's not even a spoon. It's just a piece of wood.
Anyway, I'm very excited about Spurtles. And if anybody has any Spurtles already, tell me what you think.
Because
that's going to be my birthday present. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm on board. It's super silly, and it's cheap. But I like to rip on the Spurtle. No,
I'm excited.
I'm not even ripping on the Spurtle. It's just like, it's just so funny.
It's
that
funny. Well, the way that she says the name the very first time in the infomercial is like, and it's called a Spurtle. And it's so ridiculous. But then when they go into the commercial about it, I'm like, I need it. So anyway, God. I'm very excited about that. But
yes,
it's probably time for us to say our goodbyes, I think.
It's true. Okay.
All right.
Thanks so much for listening to us babble on, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
My name is Chad. This is Z. We are the Puppet Parent Podcast. You can listen to us over at puppetparentpodcast.com. com. There's like there's not a player there yet, but there's a list of links to all these different podcasting softwares, including Apple Podcasts, Castbox, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, Overcast, Anchor, etc., etc., etc.
And you can learn more about our puppetry company at wondersparkpuppets.com.
That's true. And we're putting out live, or we're broadcasting every single day. So check us out. And if you wanted to learn more about Springville, the village we were talking about, there's a whole series of videos that we did called Mystery Max Investigates. They come out live at 11 o'clock on Saturdays, Eastern Standard Time. And there's a back catalog now of like at least 6 episodes, with 7 coming out next week. We got more. We're shooting more, and it's like there's just going to be more. So we love doing it.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's good because for as much as I want to be like, this town, nothing ever happens.
No, it's so nice.
No, we've
here.
Been going around and checking out, and there is actually a bunch of actually cool stuff happening right now in the town.
I love your town.
Me too.
I love your town. All right. Well, a big thank you to Springville Center of the Arts for hosting our summer residency, and to our neighbors upstairs, Love Inc. We love you. And have a great week, everybody.
Okay.
Bye. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Stay safe.